At a county jail in Texas, a 27-year-old man is preparing for 7 years in prison. He says he wants to do his time, change his life, and not look back.
I know the gangster life or whatever, that's not me. Like, I don't care about being the hardest dude or none of that stuff.
I want to tell you something, man. Everybody's nervous. Nobody wants to be in prison, despite what they might show.
Advice from a former inmate to a new one. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered starts at 4 p.m. on KTOO Juno.
Tonight on 360 North at 8, in Mozambique, a 16-year-old orphan builds a new life with dignity and resilience. In Films by Kids, home is where you find it. Native Report is next at 8:30. At 9, Between Earth and Sky, Climate Change on the Last Frontier, focuses on impacts to Native Alaskans and the land. Gavel Alaska's daily coverage of legislative meetings returns at 10, tonight on 360 North and 360North.org.
We're live, we're local, and it's time for a Juno Afternoon. It's Tuesday, January 16th. I'm your host, Julie Copins, here in the studio with Jeff Brown. Today, we'll find out about a planetarium presentation this evening. We'll get a preview of the CBJ Housing Forum with Beth McKibben. Andy Klein will be here with pointers on how to spend Beer Week, as if we needed any help with that. And Jen LaRoe will be here to highlight the fifth grade symphony excursion. All that, bird note, music, and more, today on a Juno Afternoon. Let's check in with the National Weather Service. Showers likely continuing until midnight and then snow showers. It'll be cloudy with a low around 35.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A meeting to address missing and murdered Native women was held Monday on the Standing Rock Reservation in North Dakota. U.S. Senator Heidi Heitkamp, tribal, federal, state, and local leaders gathered with various law enforcement officials. Leaders talked about working together to address issues involving missing and murdered Native women. The senator introduced legislation last fall to put in place protocols for law enforcement to collaborate on cases and to improve databases. The bill is named after Savannah Graywind, a pregnant Native woman who was killed in the state in August. Savannah's act also builds on legislation introduced last year to create an Amber Alert system across Indian country. The Senate Committee on Indian Affairs held a hearing on Savannah's act in October. Advocates have long urged lawmakers for more resources and the need for a greater sense of urgency to address missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. The Bureau of Land Management is seeking public comment on President Trump's proclamation reducing Bears Ears National Monument in Utah. The BLM is accepting input for at least 60 days. The agency is encouraging people to address issues, concerns, and management questions. Future public scoping meetings are expected to be announced. Tribes and national Native organizations are among those opposing the change, raising concerns about protecting artifacts and the religious use of the sacred area. Five tribes are challenging President Trump's move on Bears Ears in court. The Navajo Nation and the University of New Mexico have officially announced a partnership to assist Navajo students with housing needs. The tribe and UNM recently signed an agreement which provides housing for more than 100 students at a residence hall in Albuquerque, New Mexico. The Navajo Nation will pay the university more than $1 million to occupy space in the hall for a little more than 3 years. Tribal leaders say the move is to help address student success rates. Leaders say students often drop out of college due to lack of support, including not having a place to live. The project is the first of many housing agreements the Navajo Nation hopes to finalize in the coming months. It's negotiating with other colleges and universities to reach similar agreements and is working on additional housing in Albuquerque to build a Navajo village near UNM. The Northern Plains have gone through another period of extreme cold in the past couple days, but a forecaster says temperatures are about to climb throughout the region. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
Residents of tribal land belonging to the Cheyenne River and Standing Rock Sioux, along with those on Sisseton, Wahpeton, Oyate land, spent Tuesday morning in a wind chill warning. Officials were reporting wind chills approaching 40 below zero in some parts of the region. Much of southern South Dakota, including the Pine Ridge and Rosebud reservations, have been under a wind chill advisory. But Kyle Weiser, a National Weather Service meteorologist in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, says he and his colleagues see a warm-up coming.
We do. Even by this afternoon, I think people will be surprised. Wind chills will only be about 5 or 10 below zero coming home from work and school, which will probably feel quite a bit nicer. And then by Friday, we're looking at highs in the 40s.
Weiser says weather officials are keeping an eye on a possible storm system that could hit the Midwest this weekend. He says it's too early to tell what could come of that system. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellen Bolt.
A court has approved a $90 million settlement to pay residents of four Manitoba First Nations, which were flooded nearly 7 years ago. The Canadian Press reports the settlement resolves a class action lawsuit filed by members who alleged they were forced to leave their homes when the provincial government diverted water from a river to reduce risk of flooding to Winnipeg. The flooding caused damages to homes, farmland, and other areas impacting the First Nation communities. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by City University of New York's Graduate School of Journalism's MA in Social Journalism, Rethinking Journalism as a Community Service. Application deadline is January 5th at journalism.cuny.edu. Support from AmeriCorps Vista, whose members fight against poverty while earning money for college and gaining skills, with rewarding service opportunities around the country and info at AmeriCorps.gov/Vista.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
And at 5 minutes past the hour, you're with a Juno Afternoon. I'm Julie Copins, and I'm here in the studio with, I think I can say, a shining star in the Juno cultural scene. This is Steve Kosis. He's one of the many extraordinary volunteers who run the Marie Drake Planetarium here downtown. And I understand, Steve, you've got a pretty fascinating program on tap for this evening. Maybe tell us a little bit about what will be presented, and then we can talk more generally about the planetarium and all the cool stuff it does.
Thanks, Julie. Flattery will get you everywhere with me.
I knew
it. So tonight at 7 p.m., we're doing a show on gravitational waves, which is a whole new area of astronomy. Up to now, most of astronomy, other than meteors that fall to Earth, was done through the properties of light. And light is a form of electromagnetic waves. It's visible light. Usually you think of in astronomy, there's also invisible light, gamma rays, X-rays, infrared, microwave. But now we have a totally new area of astronomy, the gravitational waves, which were first predicted by Einstein in 1916, but were first detected 100 years later in 2015.
Wow.
And there's now four observatories for gravitational waves, two of them in the U.S.
Okay, and so we were talking about this before the show. So just in layperson's terms, this is something that happens out in deep space, outer space, and you've got dense objects like a black hole or some other astronomical phenomenon that sort of come together. They're attracted to one another because of their gravitational pull. Is that correct? And then they create waves with their interactions, and we can detect those, I don't know, mathematically? How do we even know that these gravitational waves exist?
Well, as you just said, Julie, they were first predicted from the mathematical structures that Einstein constructed for the general field equations. That was back in 1916. Mm-hmm. But any time that mass moves in space-time is the fourth-dimensional reality that we all live in, there are gravitational waves produced. But to actually detect them, because they're typically very, 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 very infinitesimally small, you have to have, as you just said, Julie, very dense objects to create them. So the densest objects known are neutron stars. So the latest detection of gravitational waves were when two neutron stars went into a death spiral, and when they merged into each other, they generated incredibly, incredibly intense energetic gravitational waves. In fact, for the fraction of a second, these gravitational waves were created by the two neutron stars emerging in one another, the energy was more than all the stars and all the galaxies in the universe multiplied times 50 for a fraction of a second. That was detected Whoa. Here on Earth a billion years after these waves were created, a billion light years from here.
Okay, my head just exploded. That's amazing.
Well, that was a long sentence. Sorry.
No, well, there's so much there. Like, just, the amount of energy. Okay, well, so then, do we feel this? I mean, is this the reason why I tripped stepping out of the shower this morning? Like, a gravitational wave hit me, or is this something that we can... Does it have any impact on us, human beings on Earth?
Well, these gravitational waves move at the speed of light because they have no mass. They're moving mm-hmm. through space-time. They're, in effect, ripples in space-time, and it's more like a bowl of jelly shaking.
Okay.
And actually, the detection of gravitational waves here on the Earth, they're all created by either black holes coalescing or neutron stars coalescing. When they reached Earth, and we're about more than a billion light years, each light year is 6 trillion miles from where these events occurred, the actual movement, the perturbation, the contraction and expansion is only about 1/1,000,000 of 1/1,000,000 of a meter, about a 1/10,000th of the atomic nucleus. So they have, the observatories use a special type of interferometry to detect these very, 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 very small movements.
Right, you've got to be looking for it.
We had three of these observatories, so mm-hmm. the detection of the signal was coincident at all three observatories.
Okay.
So that was to help confirm that
right.
it was an actual gravitational wave and not a semi-truck or
sure.
Someone who dropped their cell phone or something like that.
My bad. Okay. That's just fascinating. Okay. So you and other volunteers put on these presentations monthly at the planetarium, which is in the Marie Drake building. So explain for people maybe who have never been there before. Where is it? How do you get there? And what is it? It's like our...
Well, the address 1415 Glacier Avenue. The Marie Drake Planetarium is in the Marie Drake building. It's right behind that artificial turf field with the 10-foot-high fence.
Right.
And the planetarium's been here in Juneau for 50 years. And we'll have the doors will be open around 6:30, and we'll start the show at 7.
Right.
And the planetarium, actually, if I could put in a little plug, we're having a fun drive right now to replace our 50-year-old analog projector with a digital system.
I saw that. So right now the equipment you have, it's vintage. It's been around a while. It's old technology, but it still shows us the night sky. Right, if we were able to see it through the clouds.
Exactly right. But it shows us the night sky in a sense that's Earth-centered. So we only see the stars as seen from the Earth. The new digital systems, you can see the night sky from anywhere in the database. So you can see what the stars look like from Jupiter or Saturn or the nearest star, Alpha Centauri, in a digital system.
Right.
That would be the difference with a digital system.
And what's the price tag on that snazzy new system?
Well, the system we're looking at, it's a company in Bremerton, Washington, is about $50,000.
Okay, so you're doing a fundraiser to make that happen, so good luck with that. So people, if they come to the presentation and feel moved to contribute, they can do it at that time, or probably maybe could they go to the website and donate?
Yes, exactly. Our website, mariedrakeplanetarium.org, and we have a Facebook page also. Donations can be done in person with check or Visa or PayPal, standard ways for donations.
Excellent. Okay. So I imagine for you yourself and the astronomical enthusiasts who visit the planetarium, stars hold such a fascination for us as human beings. I wonder if you could talk about that. Like, when do you remember, maybe as a little kid for the first time, looking up and like, wow, what's out there? What kind of sparked your own imagination into this topic?
Well, I had a mentor, my physics teacher, when I was in high school, who had stargazing trips, and we went out and we started looking at the stars without any kind of optical aid, then with binoculars, and then with larger telescopes. And then I took a mirror grinding class to make my own telescope, and that's how I got interested in amateur astronomy. But I'm basically just self-taught in astronomy.
Right.
I haven't taken any academic classes in it.
Right. And what do you think it is? Like, when you were talking about gravitational waves, like, that's such a heady concept. And so why do we as human beings want and need to know about this stuff? I mean, it's way out there in space. It's not, you know, it's not going to affect tomorrow's weather, probably, or will it? I mean, why do we need to have this understanding of our galaxy?
Well, for me, it's a feeling of awe, because when you read any of the lay books on astronomy, you just see what a small part we are of the whole universe. And in fact, the evidence now is that we're in a multiverse. So there's an infinite number of universes if some of the inflation theories and cosmology are found to be correct.
Right. So somewhere there's another public radio studio where you and I are having a conversation, and maybe far more intelligent and attractive versions of ourselves are having the same conversation. We'll just never know.
That's exactly the point, because with infinity, you can do pretty much anything.
Right.
If you have an infinite set, anything's possible. And what you just said would be true if there is a multiverse. And that's they're looking at evidence to verify that now with the inflationary period right after the Big Bang.
Wow. So I imagine you get a lot of very interesting questions from visitors to the planetarium on topics like that, where really there are more questions than answers. Do you ever get one that you kind of, you're stumped and you just don't know the answer?
Yes, all the time. Usually from the young kids who come up with their
like,
questions.
Can you think of one? What do kids like
yeah,
to ask?
Yeah, well,
they
ask, what happened before the Big Bang?
Good
Big
question.
Bang times zero. So what happens before time negative,
right.
negative one? You know, what's going on?
There's no
real answer for that.
But could there be someday? Could we ever know that?
Well, there's speculation. One speculation is the multiverse is infinite, and we're just a very small subset.
Right.
And there's big bangs going on everywhere in the infinite multiverse, and we're like a little bubble in the multiverse that's occurring. So that's one conjecture about what happens before the Big Bang.
Right.
And also there's a conjecture, if you've heard of black holes is basically empty space. It could be whole universes within the black hole. In fact, we could be within a black hole, with the event horizon of the black hole being the observable universe itself. But these are all conjectures. There's no verification of that.
Well, and does sort of having a sense of that big picture and how big the big picture really could be, does it make you feel small or connected to something infinitely large?
Well, no, it makes me feel grand that humans can develop mathematical structures that are able to predict events in nature. And that's the real mystery, why manipulation of symbols with mathematics should be able to reflect nature and make predictions about nature. To me, that seems like a very deep mystery.
We've done a good job with our brains, I think, that we're given, that we can, ask these questions and try to find answers.
Well, mathematics is a candle in the dark. It's the language of science, especially in astronomy. Oh, and there's one thing I want to bring up. This month, January 31st, is going to be a total lunar eclipse. Right. It'll be visible here in Juneau. And what's interesting about the total lunar eclipse, it's always a full moon. And January 31st is the second full moon of the month. That's sometimes called the blue moon, when you have two full moons in a month. January 1st was a full moon.
Okay.
Full moon to full moon is 29 and a half days. So January 31st from 0400 to 0500 in the morning, our time, the moon will be totally in the Earth's shadow. Total lunar eclipse.
And we'll be able to see it here in Juneau if I get up early and
0400 to 0500,
okay.
January 31st.
You talked about going out stargazing with just the unaided eye. How much can we really see and observe just, lying on a sleeping bag and looking up?
Well, here in Juneau, we're very fortunate to have clear skies. And from my driveway, where I live in the valley, I see the Milky Way when it's a new moon. And also I see the polar lights, the northern lights, the aurora borealis from my driveway in Juneau. So that's what we can see in the dark nights. Once we have astronomical darkness, which we only have from August through April.
Right.
The sun is, to have astronomical darkness, the sun has to be 18 degrees below the horizon. And that's only true from August to April. The other months of the year, we have midnight twilight, as we all know, in our latitude.
You can't see everything.
Yeah, so that's
Juneau's an
darkness.
Interesting place to be a stargazer, it sounds like. Some interesting challenges, but also opportunities.
Well, the challenge is the weather, as everyone knows. And that's why we have the planetarium, so we can see the night sky.
What a great
clouds.
Resource. Thank you, and all of you at the planetarium, for being there and making the stars reachable for all of us. Any last advice for families maybe who've never been and want to take advantage of the programs there, maybe get their kids involved in astronomy? What are some
steps? Well, our shows are always free, and we always try to make them family-friendly, and it'll be an interesting challenge tonight. I have a lot of visual slides of gravitational waves, but the prediction of them is from very abstract math. So, but I'm trying to make it quite visual, so it would be accessible to all ages.
Excellent. Good. All right. Well, hope you have a great crowd tonight. And thank you, Steve Kosas, for coming in and sharing a little bit of the stars with us.
Thank you, Julie and Jeff.
No place to hang out or washing. Electric Avenue. And then we take it higher. Oh, we gonna rock, don't stoop. Electric Avenue. And then we take it higher.
Welcome back to A Juno Afternoon. This is Julie Copins, and joined in the studio now by Beth McKibben. She's the planning manager for the City Borough of Juneau, and she's here to talk about a presentation that's happening this Thursday, a housing and development forum. Tell us about that, Beth.
This is our fifth annual housing and development forum. It starts at 9 o'clock at the Vocational Training and Resource Center at 3239 Hospital Drive, and it goes until 4:30. We're offering lunch. We do need people to register because we have limited number of seats and lunches available. What do you want to know?
Okay. Well, let's go ahead and get the website out in case people are interested, and then we'll talk some more and share that info.
Sure. You can RSVP by calling 586-0789 or emailing cdd_admin@juno.org. That's cdd_admin@juno.org.
Okay, and that's to RSVP for the Housing and Development Forum. So this is an all-day event, and it's designed, as I understand, maybe for continuing education for people in the realty industry, builders and so on, and maybe also just people with the general interest in housing and building and development in town?
Absolutely. It was created with the intention of educating people about how the community development department works, issues around housing, housing numbers, ways to develop housing in Juneau. Some of our agenda items are introduction to the community development department website, the new housing website. As you many people know, we have a new housing chief housing officer. His position's a little bit over a year old, and they're in the process. His website will be rolling out. We have a variety of speakers. We have Gwen Place, who's the president of the Realtors group, and I'm sorry if I can't remember your name, your specific group organization's name. Alan Wilson. We have Jan from Alaska Housing Finance Corporation to talk a little bit about how to finance a house. We have Scott Chambord, who is our chief housing officer. We have housing data from CDD's admin officer, Brenwyn Grigg. We have Robin Potter, the city assessor. Eric Vang from Alaska Legal Services will talk a little bit about fair housing. We have information about how to use the CBJ parcel viewer. It's something that you can access through our website. Someone will walk you through how to find it, how to use it, what kind of information you can find there. We're going to talk a little bit about workforce housing, some updates to the building code and to the zoning code. I'm going to do a kind of overview about planning. Why do we have planning? What kind of permits? What is the role of the Planning Commission? I think I already mentioned this, an introduction, kind of an overview of the permit center. What kind of things do you come to the permit center for? What kind of information can you get? What services do we offer?
Wow, that's a ton of content. It sounds like you're coming at it from so many different and helpful angles for a lot of people, and really maybe kind of connecting the dots for all these things that are involved when we talk about housing.
That's our goal.
Excellent.
Definitely, we're going to try.
Yeah. Now, I would say, as a relative newcomer to Juneau, the cost of housing and the difficulty sometimes young people especially have in establishing housing here in Juneau that's affordable, that seemed to always be a topic of conversation. And I wonder, you know, we sort of have conventional wisdom, well, there's not a lot of buildable land and cost of building materials getting to Juneau. What are some of the reasons why housing is a persistently challenging, issue that we face as a community?
That's a really big, messy ball of yarn.
Let's untangle it right now.
I don't think we have time.
Okay.
So, but, you know,
the short answer.
A while back ago, the city commissioned for an housing action plan. We have an affordable housing commission, and they felt this was really important, and that was adopted actually just about a year ago. And it identified some of our housing challenges and a lot of different options for how to address it. And we're in the process of CBJ, not me, we, but mm-hmm. CBJ, in the process of developing metrics for tracking this more closely. And it is a multi-layered issue.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that current data will show that we're starting to make some progress
right.
towards opening up some housing opportunities, and hopefully we'll continue to make progress. I think creating a position for chief housing officer was a really big investment by the city in their commitment to helping to address the housing problem.
Excellent.
Challenge.
And as a planning professional, what better place to be in than a place like Juneau that has some of these challenges? I mean, makes the job really interesting and fun.
It's always interesting.
Always, you never know what you're going to get.
That's for sure. It's always interesting. It's always fun. It's always a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
There aren't really easy answers. Mm-hmm. You know, if they were easy, we would have figured it out by now.
Right. Well, something I'm sure that comes through at this development forum, the people working on it, I bet you run into some really smart, hardworking, dedicated people. I mean, if people are working in that industry here in Juneau where there are so many challenges, even just the weather, you know, they have to really want to do it, and this is something that's important to them. I imagine building relationships among those people is part of the goal of this day as well.
Absolutely. And as I mentioned, this is our fifth annual, and one of the kind of interesting things that we've noticed since the first one, which I think shows that it was a big success, is part of it is to educate people about what it is that we do and what are the different options and things available to them. A few years before that first housing and development forum, the city adopted a new subdivision option called bungalow housing, and we hadn't really seen much bungalow housing. And at the housing and development forum, we talked about bungalow housing and what does it look like and what does it do, and what do you know? We've had more bungalow housing since then. So I think, that's a really simple way to show how this effort has been successful.
Is part of it maybe looking at best practices in other locations that maybe have similar issues that we have and seeing what works, what experiments seem to be paying off down south and incorporating some of that here?
That's absolutely part of it. As I mentioned, the Housing Action Plan, that was one of the things that they did, is they researched a lot of different ways to approach the problem and gave us a long list of resources for going and doing more research and investigating different ways that communities have addressed these issues. Juneau is kind of very unique in the housing world because we are isolated. We're not road accessible. So a lot of communities that have expensive housing and shortage of housing usually have other communities that you can drive to and receive lower cost, more affordable housing
right.
from. And
which can create a whole other set of problems.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. But we don't have that little release
right.
valve. We have to
We're
address
all on top of
our
each other.
housing challenge here in Juneau mm-hmm. by ourselves.
Yeah. Well, thanks for doing the good work to keep roofs over our heads. And I bet there are going to be a lot of people who have an interest in this forum. So tell us again the times, where it is, and how people can register.
So to register, you can call 586-0789 or email cdd_admin@juneau.org. It is Thursday, January 18th, it starts at 9 o'clock at the Vocational Training and Resource Center at 3239 Hospital Drive.
Great. Great. Beth McKibben, thank you so much for coming in. I hope it all goes well and you have a great crowd on Thursday.
Thanks so much for having me.
Take care.
This is Bird Notes. Why do some birds gather in flocks? And why do some even join forces with other species? For pure elemental reasons, of course, to avoid predators and to find prey of their own. When birds fly in a flock, each individual bird is less likely to be captured by a predator, like a falcon. A single bird in a flock of 20 has only a 5% chance of being chased, whereas a bird alone is the only game in town. All that confusing movement makes it far more difficult for that falcon to concentrate on any one bird. And a flock of starlings, a murmuration, might even dive on a hawk, scaring it away. Imagine a whirling mass of thousands of birds headed right for you. With many birds together, there are more eyes looking in more directions, so birds spend more time feeding and less time looking around. And this is true across species as well. Some shorebirds that forage with their heads down, like godwits, will flock with birds that forage with their heads up, like curlews. Still other birds work together, like American white pelicans driving fish before them, or auklets that surround schools of herring and herd them like a border collie does sheep. See photos and videos of all this on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann. Today's show brought to you by the Bobolink Foundation.
It's not too late to download our Midnight Oil podcast. Alaska's Energy Desk traces the history of oil in Alaska and takes a peek into the future.
We have to decide what the narrative is, right? Are we all sort of watching Rome burn, or are we on the cusp of some sort of amazing transformation?
Visit KTOO.org or subscribe to Midnight Oil wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Johnny Negotiable, host of the Friday edition of Soundings on KRNN. You know, one of the perks about doing the program is all I learn about music in the process and get to share with you, our listeners. Tune in and we'll learn all about the singers and musicians and their songs and the notes they've spent a lifetime perfecting. You'll be amazed, I guarantee it. Join me Fridays at 10 for 2 hours of jazz, blues, and much more. Thanks.
We're back with a Juno Afternoon. I'm Julie Copins here in the studio with producer Jeff Brown, and suddenly a hogshead of beer just walked in the door.
Is that a term?
It is now. There's a boatload of beer here.
That's better.
sounds more appetizing. I'm here with Andy Klein and Rochelle. I didn't catch your last name, Rochelle.
Rogers.
Rochelle Rogers here to talk about our favorite week of the year. It's Beer Week.
AK Beer Week. We're really excited about it. It's a thing that we look forward to all year, and it's a way that we just start celebrating beer in general, beer from Alaska specifically, and then we love to kind of do special things from our brewery during that week as well. So okay. We got a bunch of stuff. We've already done stuff. Rochelle's been planning stuff for weeks and weeks, months.
What you got on tap, Rochelle?
Yeah, we've been busy to make sure that there are daily events for people who want to celebrate craft beer in Alaska.
So yeah, so we just last night. We had a special tapping of a really special beer called Tree Beard that has 5 different tree species in the beer. We did that over at the hangar last night.
How Entish of you.
Yeah, yes, very. There, you got it.
I got
you
the reference.
Got it. All right.
I'm just
all
outed
right.
myself as a complete geek.
That's very good. Little orcs are here among us. Yeah. Today we're doing some Dog Days stuff, right? We got our Husky IPA and celebrating that.
Yes. So pouring Husky IPA at the tasting room. We're also doing a sale on Husky IPA gear and also any dog gear that we have at both locations. And they're going to raffle off a really cool dog cabin at the tasting room this afternoon.
Wait, a dog cabin?
Like a log cabin, but made for dogs.
Oh, that's so cute.
It's very cute.
Really? Is this the dog cabin that was on near your desk?
Is it that one? It's my desk cabin.
We're auctioning off our office cabin is going to go.
It's very exciting.
It's exciting, but it's a little bit I'm a little misty-eyed. It's a little bittersweet to see
it
go.
A little bit, yeah.
It's been in the office for a while.
Okay.
Under my desk.
Are these tastings dog-friendly, or do I need to leave my dog at home? Probably
I
a good
think
idea.
The dog,
dog
you,
has to
yeah.
stay home, unfortunately.
Okay. We kind of we produce beer there, so we have a policy
right.
of not having dogs in the facility.
Right.
It just feels...
No, I get it. I get it. Okay. So this is the Alaskan Brewery. You said the tasting room. Is that the one out in Lemon Creek?
It
right.
is.
And what are the times this evening?
So the sale's going on all day, so stop by either of the locations for 20% off any Husky gear or dog gear. And the raffle will take place at 5:30 at the tasting room in Lemon Creek, so make sure
okay,
that you get your name in before 5:30.
All right, I got to get out there. I want that dog cabin. Okay, and then Wednesday, we've got a beer gear sale
yeah.
at Alaskan Brewery.
That's a fun thing. Just going to be doing that on Wednesday. Thursday, what's happening Thursday?
Thursday is barrel-aged tap takeover.
That's a big one.
Yes, there's so, five different barrel-aged beers on tap, which is going to be very cool.
Yeah. Tonight is something happening at the Narrows. I should, almost forgot to mention that, and actually we have a sample of what they're going to be doing here. And another thing that's really
Andy
exciting.
Andy is holding up the largest can of beer I've ever seen.
This is called a crowler. And a crowler is a can growler.
That's brilliant.
So you can pour any beer that we have on tap at the brewery, and you can take it home
wow.
in this can. We haven't sold them yet, and they're starting to be on sale starting on Friday. So that's a big deal for us to have crowlers now available. This was developed
by... This is
by
an idea whose time clearly has come.
Yeah, this was developed... This is a really cool thing because it was developed by a craft beer company called Oscar Blues. They're based in Colorado,
mm-hmm.
and they're really based on cans. And they
right.
have then made this machine that allows you to can a beer right there on site. Should we have some of this?
I'm ready.
Okay,
no, but
this...
now I'm wishing I'd booked you guys last.
I know.
I'm
well, that's all right. Mess. That's all right. You can always push the other guests
oh
a little
God.
Bit here.
Jeff, are you ready to step up if
so,
I'm
yes,
incapacitated?
Yes, I can speak for in Jeff's behalf. Yes, he's willing. So this is a fun beer for us because one of the great kind of favorite beers we've done for years is oatmeal stout.
Mm-hmm.
And we stopped doing six-pack productions of oatmeal stout this past year. But now we have brewed an Imperial Oatmeal Stout, and we are going to tap that at the Narrows Bar tonight.
Okay.
First place outside of this studio
right.
that anyone will be able to drink this beer
okay.
is going to be the Oatmeal Stout,
Let's
Imperial
hear it.
Oatmeal
we're
Stout. So here it is.
It
see how this is.
Oh, I love that.
That sound. Worked, yes.
And he's got these little, how many ounces in the tasting glasses you're pouring
They
here?
Pour about 4 ounces. I think
mm-hmm.
they're, if you fill them
that
to the brim, they're six.
This is a dark beer. It
Very.
Looks like it looks like a cappuccino with
like
a the
like motor oil like almost. Yeah, it's really.
Well, I was,
yeah,
better than motor oil.
All right,
it's hearty souls here for this beer.
And you're just pouring it straight in. There was nothing fancy about
nope.
the pour there. Cheers.
Cheers. I'm gonna pass one over to
okay.
Jeff too.
That's
true.
Jeff's
producer. Like, what am I chopped liver over here working
okay.
the board, man?
This is thirsty work.
Well, cheers, everyone. Here's
right.
to AK Beer Week.
Beer Week.
Hey, beer week.
Oh, listeners, I wish you could taste this.
Right, rich.
That is delicious.
Mmm.
It's not just for breakfast anymore.
No.
It's oatmeal stout.
Now, and the Imperial means higher alcohol. I think this is in the 10%.
Yeah, yours is around 9.8. 9.8,
yeah.
Okay.
So it's a little bit bigger beer. And it leads us to one last thing I do
sure.
want to talk about, which is that we're doing this really amazing thing on Saturday. It's a beer dinner over at Salt.
Mm.
It's called the Dinner of the Dark Arts. And it is going to be one that allows Chef Lionel over there to combine with a bunch of our dark beers. And we're doing something that's kind of in that luau theme, I would say. So all those, I don't want to give away all the dishes, but you've got some of them, right?
I do have a sneak peek at the menu, and it looks absolutely delicious.
And this is Saturday at Salt.
Saturday
Correct.
At Salt. There's yep. still tickets available.
Okay. How do I get tickets or where do I go for more info?
You can go to the Depot,
here.
Downtown Depot, or mm-hmm. out at the Lemon Creek or the two locations for the brewery, the easiest place to get the tickets.
Okay. You can get
yeah.
them at the brewery.
Yep.
Excellent. Any other last tips? We will really want to celebrate Beer Week in a big way. What do we need to do here?
Anything else that we haven't mentioned so far? I mean,
I don't think so. I'll just say stop by either of our locations. The tasting room is having events every day. So for the rest of the week, and then finishing out with this amazing beer dinner.
It's always a good day to stop by the brewery and have a sample
you.
Of beer, right? Whether it's beer week or not. But
I'm with you.
Yeah.
Andy, Rochelle, thank you so much for the treat
Thanks,
and
really,
all the great
cheers.
Info. Happy beer week, you
Thank
guys.
You. Cheers.
Thank you.
You're back with the Juno Afternoon. I'm Julie Copins, and if you've been listening, we just said goodbye to our visitors from Beer Week, Andy and Rochelle, and on the way out, I noticed that they were carrying a six-pack of Alaskan Spruce IPA, so I've actually pulled them back into the studio, so we're gonna open
another
one.
It went too short.
That was not enough beer.
I know,
beer.
Not enough time, so let me get out my keychain here, which has a...
That is brilliant.
Now, this is our Spruce IPA.
Okay.
It's really a cool beer for us because it features, of course, the local ingredient, spruce tips.
So how do you work that into the beer-making process?
Yeah, so they are we kind of put them in a big, gigantic stainless steel, what sort of like a tea bag, and we put that in the beer while the beer is boiling in the brew kettle. And so it kind of extracts out a lot of the characteristics of early spring spruce tips that everyone in Juneau probably knows, right?
You walk
on a trail and you pop a spruce tip in your mouth, and it doesn't taste piney. It tastes lemony and tart and berry and all that stuff. So
this
is our seasonal. It's out right now. It's going to be out until kind of like late March, early April, I think, is when Kolsch is going to be coming in. So look for it on store shelves now. It's got a beautiful snowy owl on the
really
label.
Really refreshing.
Isn't that nice? So it's an IPA, but a little bit lower on the bitterness than most IPAs, but still a lot of hop flavor and mixes in with the spruce flavor really well.
And is there something like healthy about having the spruce tips? Can I feel good about drinking this beer?
It's got a lot of vitamin C.
That's true.
Yeah. No scurvy. Right. You will not have scurvy this year if you keep drinking the spruce tips.
Because scurvy's a bummer.
No one wants it. No.
All right.
Not at this age.
I might finish that one.
That one you can
nice
keep.
Nice beer. Yeah, the other one, it's only, where are we? It's a little too early for me to be drinking the other one.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll leave some bottles for you here. That's good.
Good. So let's talk about Alaskan Brewery and the incorporation of some of the local ingredients. What are some other things that you think make Juneau beer, Alaskan beer, distinctive, and that is recognized for the beer community out in the world, an Alaskan beer? What is that special about it?
Every single beer that we do is in some way, whether it's the kind of inspiration of it or whether it's actually local ingredients of it, ties directly to Alaska. We feel like every beer we make is telling the story of Alaska and living here. So smoked porter, for instance, well, we use alderwood to smoke malt. And we use that smoke malt in the porter, and that
nobody
makes
else
us,
is going to do that.
No one else
They're
is doing that.
They're going to do that in New Jersey.
No one else. That's right. No one's doing that. Spruce tips are an ingredient that we kind of feel like we almost kind of own in a way. We really know how to make great different beers with using spruce tips. We get inspiration from like high bush cranberries. So we're going to be doing a cranberry tart coming out later on in 2018 that people can look for that has the inspiration from high bush cranberries, also has some spruce tips in it. So, and then the other big thing, you know, that you don't think about much, but the water.
Huh.
Juneau's water is second to none. Hmm. We're so fortunate to have this amazing water source here, and that's 80% of every beer you drink is water.
You're powered by water.
And we're powered by water, and we're powered by grain. Yeah. So, you know, we use our spent grain to burn to make the steam that makes the beer. We're the only brewery in the world that does that. So we kind of feel like being in Juneau has affected every way that we operate, and then we try to put some of that in every beer we make, too.
Excellent. What a great story, and what a great way for us in Juneau to enjoy being together, cracking open an Alaskan beer.
We can, side of the issue or that side of the issue, we can both agree to have a nice beer, right, and talk about things. That's what you do.
All right. Well, Andy and Rochelle, thank you for coming back in with a second glass for me. I'm really going to get in trouble
here.
I love
this. An encore. I loved it.
What
brought back, right.
It's like a rock concert. How many encores?
One more.
I think this will be it. We will say goodbye, and we'll catch you a year from now in Beer Week 2019, but there's still more festivities coming up through Saturday.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, just check it out. Come to the location and check it out for anyone listening. Thanks, Julie.
Cheers.
Appreciate
to you guys.
It. Thanks, Jeff.
Lapping up that good old country water. Sure makes a big, hairy guy like me thirsty. That's when I wrap my lips around a tall, sweaty, edible bottle of good old country Bear Whiz beer. As my daddy said, son, it's in the water. That's why it's yellow. Bear Whiz beer.
Bear Whiz beer.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon. I'm Julie Copens here in the studio with our producer, Jeff Brown, and visited now by Jen LaRoe. She is with the Juno Arts and Humanities Council, focusing on education, and is here to talk about a really cool program, the Excursion Program. Tell us just generally, what is the Excursion Program, and what's the next one coming up?
Okay, thanks, Julie. I am here as the coordinator for Any Given Child. It's a collective impact initiative for Juno, and we're trying to do a lot of things that center around ensuring equitable arts education for all Juno students. And one way we have focused in on doing that is by providing this programming called the Art Bus Excursions. And the idea is to ensure that every student in a specific grade get to attend an arts activity or event of some kind, a performance or some sort of event. And currently we have three that are up and running, and the next one coming up is the fifth grade symphony excursion. So partnering is a big part of this program, mm-hmm. and so we're partnering with the Juno Symphony, who have actually been offering this to Juno fourth and fifth grade students for many years. They did it as an invitation to fourth and fifth grade teachers, and not everyone could fit, and not everyone found it as a valuable experience for their class, or whatever reasons they didn't all attend. And so partnering with Any Given Child, we kind of focused in on having it be specifically geared towards fifth grade students, and with the support of the Juno School District Administration, Ted Wilson is very involved in our programming. He's the head of teaching and learning at the administration level, and he has supported us in requesting that every fifth grade teacher bring their class to this event so that all students get a chance to see what the symphony is, what the instruments are, and it's a really cool interactive program. Working with the school teachers at all the elementary schools, we provide them with some curriculum from the link-up program with Carnegie Hall. Mm-hmm. Sorry, this is a long, rambling mm-hmm. answer to your question.
That's okay.
But that's kind of how this program can be. It's very involved with lots of different entities.
Yeah.
So music teachers have been spending some time with the curriculum and teaching students a few key songs that they'll get to play along with the symphony.
So it's
at
not
the concert.
Just it's not just kids get on a bus and
right.
go hear a symphony concert.
Yeah,
there's preparation.
It's not just a field trip. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And why? I guess why the matchup with fifth grade and symphony music? Is there a thought behind that? That this is.
You know, that would be a better question for symphony folks or school teachers, and I'm not really the one that facilitates that level of this.
Okay.
And so that's part of the beauty of this program is that it involves all these different parts of the community, teachers, symphony staff members, and musicians in the planning process.
Mm.
So, they all came up with the idea. As mm-hmm. I said, Juno Symphony geared it towards fourth and fifth graders for a long time. So I'm sure
right.
that there's some real strong background in that area.
Right.
Yeah.
And this is a week from Friday, the 26th,
yeah.
right? So it's a daytime concert.
Yeah, and so that's part of our target is to meet students in school because we find most of our Juno students are in school here. So that's part of the approach from an equity standpoint, that's where we find them.
You're going to get them all.
Yeah, yeah. Not all kids can do after school or
right.
evening things. So,
right.
Yeah. So, and the other important partner in this is First Student Busing,
mm-hmm.
and they provide this bus for free for all
That's
students.
An incredible
so,
donation.
Yeah, I just put in a request for 10 buses.
Wow.
So,
good
yeah.
for them
mm-hmm.
for supporting this. Mm-hmm. So do you know what the repertory is going to be that the students will hear at this concert? Or
We're having a meeting next week
okay.
to learn about that, for me to learn about it. I'm sure the symphony already knows. But
right.
Part of it is the curriculum from the Carnegie Hall Link Up. And I know Ode to Joy is one of the pieces the students learn
Love
to play
one.
Along.
Right.
But I think the symphony might be pulling in some of their repertoire from their concert that they'll be doing for the public on Friday and Saturday this week,
Excellent.
Next week. So, yeah.
Excellent. Well, I remember I grew up in Cincinnati, and we did a field trip to the symphony, and I'm thinking maybe like fourth or fifth grade, around the
yeah.
same age. And I had been to the symphony before because, my parents would take me now and then, or I was exposed. But a lot of students, this is maybe their first exposure.
That's true.
What do you hope will be the takeaway for them?
Well, I'm thinking, too, about how in sixth grade in our schools here, students get a chance to participate in the band or orchestra. And so this is really good timing for fifth graders to see different instruments that they may never have experienced.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's a big part of it is opening up the world of music to students and music that they might not be familiar with.
And to think of themselves.
Like, think of
I
themselves
could pick that
musicians.
Up and make that beautiful
right.
sound.
Right. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay. And this is part of a larger effort. You talked about Any Given Child being all about kind of leveling the playing field for students in Juneau so that it's not just a few kids who get to do all the cool stuff, that we all of our students have access. And another part of that is empowering teachers to bring the arts into their classroom. And you've got some interesting workshops going on now with some of our teachers and artists and bring
right.
in some experts from afar.
Yeah, so there's a whole other program in Juneau right now called Artful Teaching, and it's a partnership between the university, the school district, and the Arts Council, and the focus is on professional development for teachers that are new to the field of teaching in the hopes of supporting them and enriching their experience so they stay in the field.
Mm-hmm.
And the avenue that we're taking is through arts integration, so learning in and through the arts, so helping teachers learn strategies and ways to incorporate the arts in the curriculum that they already are presenting. This is a way to open up the playing field also for all students who might learn more readily through an artistic approach, maybe through expressing themselves artistically, they'll better understand the curriculum rather than the traditional, testing or reading and writing and regurgitating material, but maybe interpreting it and turning it into a monologue or creating a play or a song or dance that interprets their understanding of information.
Yeah, and I had the opportunity to attend a couple of these, and I was so impressed by the teachers coming in who probably never really thought of themselves as musicians or actors or whatever. They jumped in with both feet and were really enthusiastic and were like, they're so excited about what new windows this would open up for them, and they're planning their lessons and reaching some of those hard-to-reach students.
Right. Yeah, and I was just talking with my partner in this work, Amy Rautiainen, is with the school district, and we were just talking about how we're trying to get teachers to see the inner artist within themselves, to be able to understand the arts in a personal way and be able to maybe take that and apply it to their teaching practice.
Mm.
So we do have workshops coming up, and we do have visiting artists that often come up, but we also want to take stock in our own local cohort of teaching artists and develop them in a way that they can then support this project also. But right now we're waiting for Randy Barron to arrive from he's from Santa Fe area, and he will be focusing on creative movement and math and other, like, developing good behaviors in class and using dance and movement in a way that I look forward to learning more about when he's here. So he'll be here this week. He'll be working with teachers that are enrolled in the Artful Teaching program Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday. And then on Friday and Sunday, he'll be working with our teaching artists to help them learn more about how they can take their art form and teach it to teachers.
Brilliant. Now, so you're a parent of some creative kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a kid myself. So for those parents who might be listening and knowing that my student is going to be exposed either to a symphony concert through the excursion program or through some artful teaching, is there anything I can do at home as a parent to kind of magnify and support what's happening that's really exciting now in our classroom?
Sure. Any involvement that parents want to have in this project, we're always looking for volunteers to help with Any Given Child projects. But also just, encouraging creativity at home, maybe turning off the screens and picking up some art supplies, just giving children an opportunity to create and express themselves through art, I think is a really good thing to do.
Good reminder for all of us. Okay, so they can find out more on the JAC website. Give us that address.
Yeah, we have arts education pages on the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council website. I think it's I don't even know what it is.
JAHC.org.
I think I got that right. And then there's also an artfulteaching .org website that has more information about that professional development program that's happening. And then Any Given Child is also working on finalizing our website, and that's anygivenchildjuno.org.
Great. Jen LaRoe, thank you for sharing all this great information and doing this wonderful work. It's so important.
My pleasure.
Take care. Coming up to the top of the hour, we're closing out a Juno afternoon. Weather forecast for this evening, continued showers, patchy fog after 3 a.m. with a low around 37. We'll be back tomorrow. Please join us.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juno, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital...